This is the 1A Radio Enterprise. The year is 2437, and the starship WAMU-885 hurtles through space, careening through the galaxy, seeking the discovery of new and unknown civilizations. But what can be known must be balanced by what was before. The teacher of the next generation of explorers, Miss Fink, tries to rally her students. But as they drift through the deep reaches of space, the students have other thoughts.
What is the point of listening to some old janky radio from 2019?
Jonquin asked, rolling her eyes as she waited for the teacher's response, though she doubted it would change her mind about a single thing.
Because you could learn something?
Miss Fink said, as she walked the aisles of the classroom, taking time to check the notes of every student in her class. Eyes drifted towards the window, catching sight of the streak of stars and the constellations that burned, churning and changing before her eyes could focus.
Learn what? Huh? Seems like a bunch of nonsense to me.
Oh, so you know how to host a radio show?
Well, no, but Miss Fink, that was over 300 years ago.
So you say, but the past might still have things to teach us.
Jonquin sighed and rolled her eyes, resigned to her fate, as her teacher loaded up the audio and pressed play.
This is 1A. I'm Kimberly Adams, sitting in for Joshua Johnson in Washington. Audio fiction is experiencing something of a revolution here in the U.S. It's an art form that goes back to the very start of radio, and it's back with major companies pouring big money into audio dramas. We got into the action a little bit ourselves with our own bit of fiction at the top of the show, courtesy of 1A's Jonquin Hill, Catherine Fink, and Morven Givens. So what's driving this resurgence, and what caused audio dramas to fall out of favors until smartphones and podcasts brought them back? Joining me now in studio is David Reinstrom, the host of Radio Drama Revival Podcast.
How
David, welcome to 1A.
Thank you so much, Kimberly.
And joining us from Portland, Oregon, is podcast critic and journalist Elena Fernandez-Collins, who goes by Ellie. Ellie, welcome to 1A.
Hi, thank you for having me.
All right, so just to get us started, Ellie, can you tell me what exactly is audio fiction?
Audio fiction is a form of performance for fiction. You have a story that you want to tell, and sometimes you do that in with one voice or many voices, with sound design and with music.
Okay. And what distinguishes audio fiction from, say, an audio book?
An audio book usually has one narrator reading directly from a text, including things like all of the prose, he said, she said. Audio fiction sometimes has that. But often just is more similar to a theater production or a play.
All right. So, David, can you talk to us about the roots of audio fiction in podcasts?
Sure. So let's go back. Let's take a little journey.
Let's go back in time.
So a lot of what I'm going to talk about today, a lot of what Ellie and I are going to talk about in this first segment, is drawn from a history that was created by Ella Watts, our friend Ella, over at BBC Sounds. And something important to mention is that there's kind of an unbroken tradition of audio fiction in the UK and Germany that kind of stopped in the US with the birth of television. Television didn't really kill audio drama in the UK. Like, they have radio drama awards that are like the Oscars. People are still super into it there. And you see this resurgence in the United States only really in the past 15 years. So if we can cast our minds back to 2006 or so, the birth of podcasting, this era that's like 2006 to 2009 is when you start to have what's called podfict, what I would say is audio fiction, almost proto-audio fiction. And Ellie, maybe hop in if you remember more about escape artists than me. But to me, that's like the very origin of audio drama in the United States and Canada.
Escape Artist is the name of a podcast.
Escape Artist, thank you, is the name of like a production company that encompasses, I think, four. There's like Pseudopod.
Yeah.
Go for it, Ellie.
Oh, yeah, there's it's Pseudopod, like
Podcastle, right?
Podcastle, yeah.
Escape Pod.
They do like every podcast that they have covers a different genre of fiction. So there's one for horror, right? One for kids fic.
One for fantasy.
Yeah. And they were among the first. If you actually go to their website, they'll actually note that one of the first podfics out there was Earthcore by Scott Seigler.
And he was an author that tried to serialize his work in, you know, kind of in the grand tradition of Dickens, was reading short fiction into, unlike Dickens, into a recorded medium, but serializing it for an audience. And in that period, actually, I think in 2007, the podcast that I am now the host of, Radio Drama Revival, was founded by Fred Greenhalgh, our former host. I took over only in like 2015. So we've been on the air for a while. The purpose of our show is to showcase the diversity and vitality of modern audio fiction. And I've been listening to that show for as long as I've known audio fiction existed.
Okay, but I will say about audio fiction, having taken many long car rides with my mother.
Yes.
There's a tradition of it in the U.S.
Absolutely.
That people still listen to these shows that were Westerns or crime series. I mean, those shows have kind of had an audience over time.
Absolutely. I should be clear, the name of our show is Radio Drama Revival. We do not want to deny the vast and wondrous history of audio fiction in the United States and in Europe and in Canada. There's all sorts of my first audio drama experience, I was telling you before, so my first like over the air experience was definitely the Guy Noir sketches on Prairie Home Companion, but the first classic audio drama that I listened to was the new Nero Wolfe radio mysteries from NBC Blue with Sidney Greenstreet. And those would have been from, I don't know, probably 1948 to 1952 or so.
So David, why do you think they fell out of fashion here for a time? You mentioned that in the US, in the UK and in Europe, like, they're still a strong tradition. Television was a part of something that made this fall out of favor here. Did War of the Worlds have anything to do with it?
I don't think that it did. That would have been 1936, right? Mm-hmm. That was the famous broadcast that everyone talks about as like having caused this immense panic. I don't think that Orson, because that was the Mercury Theater on the air. That was Wells continued to produce stuff well after War of the Worlds. That's certainly his most famous production today, but radio dramas continued on through the post-war period. I would say that probably the biggest contributor to the lack of audio dramas in the television broadcast era was probably a decreased amount of commissioning bodies. So the last... The
what do
last,
you mean by commissioning bodies?
So, you know, there used to be this thing called NPR Playhouse, and y'all created stuff like, I think Yuri Rosofsky did like a Don Quixote in like the 70s. The last one that was done, and this was really the last hurrah, some listeners might remember, is the Star Wars tie-in audio dramas that were produced by NPR Playhouse in like from 79 to 83, that had Mark Hamill and Anthony Daniels as the only remaining members of the original cast. But other than that, you know, and one-offs that Jonathan Mitchell has done with The Truth for various NPR commissioning stuff, there hasn't been like a big public funding body the way that the BBC funds broadcast drama.
A fan of audio dramas, Aaron in New Hampshire, called in and left this message for us.
I've been listening to audio dramas for a few years now. Some of my favorites are Girl in Space and Dream Boy. I continue to be impressed with what I'm hearing, and I think that in the same way that punk rock and hip-hop kicked open doors and changed the way we look at pop music, audio dramas are pushing storytelling boundaries and opening up space for stories you wouldn't find elsewhere. True crime and talk shows seem to get all the love in the podcasting world, but audio dramas are the vanguard of fiction, and I hope they're about to have a moment.
And having a little bit more of a throwback, Carmel tweeted, "My husband and I listen to old Gunsmoke episodes on tape, and we love the old shows. WAMU, that's the member station in Washington, D.C., plays on Sunday nights. I love that podcasts are coming out with fiction." Ellie, Aaron mentioned on the phone that nonfiction podcasts get more respect in the audio industry. Does that resonate with you?
Oh, it absolutely does. it's slowly becoming less so. I do think that, you know, this comment about having a moment, capital M, is definitely happening. But it was the case that, you know, if you look up podcast, you know, lists and best ofs and, even just like themed lists from, you know, from the past 15 years, you're not going to find fiction on any of them. And it's not until you get to around 2012, maybe, when Welcome to Night Vale got really popular. And then you'll start finding Welcome to Night Vale on lists. You'll start finding Within the Wires a little bit later, right? The Bright Sessions. And then you'll also you'll often find in some of the articles and some of the blurbs that are written about fiction podcasts in order to promote them in more recent years, they'll do that by throwing all of the rest of the fiction podcast world under the bus.
I want to hit on something that Aaron said in their comment from New Hampshire about audio fiction being this very punk rock kind of medium, and tie into what Ellie was saying about Welcome to Night Vale, which I think started in 2012. Ellie, does that sound right to you?
Yeah, 2012.
2012. Like what they say about the famous band Velvet Underground, like 5,000 people bought a record. That's it. But every one of those 5,000 people went home and started a garage band.
All right, we're talking about the history of audio fiction, but who's telling these stories today? We're speaking with Elena Fernandez-Collins and David Reinstrom of Radio Drama Revival. We'll add some new voices to our conversation in just a moment. I'm Kimberly Adams. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Kimberly Adams, in for Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the ever-evolving world of audio fiction. We'd love to hear from you, too. What are your favorite audio dramas, old and new? What do you love about them? If you're a creator, what drove you to make your show? And what are some of the struggles? Comment on our Facebook page or tweet us at 1A. You can also email us, 1A@WAMU.org. We're hearing from some of you already. Steven sent this to our inbox. Please, please, please don't forget KCRW's Joe Frank. In the 1990s, his odd and bizarre stories on the radio kept me working as a young architect, newly practicing in Santa Monica. He was awesome. Awesome. Rest in peace. And Matt tweeted, I grew up on the classic radio dramas they would play on NPR Radio Playhouse. The Star Wars radio serial or great shows like Suspense or X1. I'm so happy audio dramas are coming back. Let's add two more folks to the conversation. Joining us now from Marketplace in Los Angeles is James Kim. He's the creator and producer of the new audio drama podcast, Moonface. James, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
And also here with us in studio is Lisette Alvarez. They're the creator and producer of the audio fiction podcast, Kalila Stormfire's Economical Magic Services.
Awesome to be here.
All right. So, James, let's start with you. Can you talk a bit about Moonface? What inspired the show?
Sure. Yeah. So I was a radio producer for quite some time and covering entertainment. And I just did a lot of stories and a lot of interviews with people of color who are always saying, you know, no doors are opening for me. Everyone says that my ideas, they're not going to make any money in Hollywood. And I was just looking at audio fiction and podcasting and seeing it as a way in which all these creators, especially in Los Angeles, you have writers, actors, directors, sound designers who aren't getting any work and they want to tell their stories. Well, here's like this medium that's so much more affordable and you can do it yourself. And so I just kind of got inspired by, you know, talking to all these people and getting really excited, hoping that someone and more people would do it. And then I just thought, well, I don't know if I'm so passionate, maybe I should just step in and do it myself. So that was kind of the whole starting point of Moonface. And I just wanted to tell a story that I could relate to, something that I wasn't seeing in Hollywood, and something that hopefully other people could connect with. It's basically just a podcast about semi-autobiographical of a Korean-American son who wants to come out to his mother, but they can't speak the same language. And then it just goes from there.
In more ways than one, not speaking the same language. Moonface just came out this week. Here's the main character talking to his mom and a cashier at the grocery store.
How are you today?
Good, thanks. You?
Fine, thank you.
Mom, put your purse down. I'm getting this.
Hey, 네가 돈이 어딨다고?
Mom, it's fine. I have enough.
Will you be needing a bag?
Yeah. Thank you.
That'll be $76.38.
Wait, seriously?
Oh, Paul, 나 쿠폰 no, 있어.
My mom wants to use these coupons. Is that okay?
Sure.
Oh, sorry. I have to take this. One second.
Wait, but...
That was part of Moonface, the new audio fiction podcast that dropped just this week. James, this sounds almost like a docudrama. The relationship between the main character and the mom is so complex. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So my mom and I kind of have a similar relationship. She is from South Korea, and she immigrated here in the 80s, early 80s, and you know, when she had me, and my parents were very, you know, adamant about me acclimating and assimilating to American culture. And part of that was me kind of losing my Korean language. But unfortunately with my mom, she mainly speaks Korean and I only speak English. And it's been difficult for us to have these conversations and have very personal, dialogue with each other. And, you know, I did have that moment where I was coming out to my mom. It's definitely not as dramatic that happens in the show, but, you know, so a lot of that was pulled from my own life and talking with a lot of people, especially Korean Americans that I know personally, there's just so many other people who went through my experience of not being able to talk to their parents because they just don't speak the same language. And that was just something that I was hoping that, you know, by doing this story, other people can connect to that too.
You mentioned sort of trying to figure out where that line is between how much you're going to share. Moonface deals with a lot of adult issues and themes. It is a bit R-rated. So to be all up in your business, how much of this is based on your actual life?
I would probably say, this is so, I was hoping not to ask this question, but I would honestly say, I would say maybe about 60, 70% of it. It's a good chunk, but there is a lot of fictionalized moments.
So then why do tell this story as a piece of fiction as opposed to something that is a bit more nonfiction or documentary style? What does telling this story as fiction allow you to do?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is that I really don't want to make a podcast, just a documentary series about myself. I can't do that. I don't know what it is. I just can't. And I think that it's less about me making it on kind of my life, but more me wanting to get into this space. And I'm a horrible writer. I can't write at all. Even when I was doing my radio scripts for like a 4-minute piece, like it was just horrible.
I doubt that's the case.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, I struggled, but and I just figured that if I'm going to step into this space and I don't know these basic tools, I'm going to just have to write a story that I truly, truly know. And so that's kind of where everything started. And I mainly chose it because of my comfort level of writing these characters and writing these story arcs and writing this world and making it feel honest and true. But if I could do it again, and now that I have this experience, I would totally not do a show about myself.
Ellie, let's bring you back into this. Why are we seeing this resurgence in audio fiction right now?
I think that there's a lot of reasons for that are all intersecting together. So one of the first reasons that anyone's gonna cite, right, is this supposed lack of gatekeeping, by which they are referring to a lower, not lowest, barrier of entry kind of thing. You know, you can record yourself. You don't have to have your fiction approved by anyone like you would for, you know, TV or books, etc. And that becomes a little bit less true when you consider that there's more to this than just monetary resources and networking. But that's one of the reasons. The other reason, I think, would be that we're seeing right now, which is why we're having this moment, is big money has started coming into it, right? We're starting to see things like Marvel's Wolverine and the new Marvel's new podcast, Marvel's. We're starting to see Hollywood-style publishing production houses creating things like Blackout and The Edge of Sleep with popular celebrities like Rami Malek. And that money coming in is, I think, really driving a lot of interest into what is happening right now. So we're seeing this combined resurgence of, oh, Welcome to Night Vale happened, right? And we mentioned that that kind of caused like a serial effect in fiction podcasting, right? The Velvet Underground, everyone started a garage band. And then, because they can just do that with a mic and their computer. And then we've got now the money coming in, which is causing media to start paying attention.
There still are quite a few independent fiction podcasts. Lisette, I want to play a clip from the season 2 trailer of Kalila Stormfire's Economical Magic Services. Let's listen in.
When they say there's a monster inside of each girl, curled around her lungs like a savage snarl, they never quite understand the literal application of the concept. The monster inside the girl comes when there is a space, a hesitation, a fear. It comes like a demon. It comes like an eldritch god climbing up the sinew and bones of its tiny human container. It comes as the thoughts of rending flesh when the father tells her to behave.
All right, Lisette, you want to give a little bit of context for that?
So this was the season 2 trailer. I don't want to give too much away, but...
Well, why don't you tell us who Kalila is?
Yes. So Kalila Stormfire's Economical Magic Services is a story about a witch for hire who was recently kicked out of her coven and now has a mysterious saboteur out to destroy her magic business. So this character, Kalila, she is, you know, kind of giving case files. The voice that you heard, I will say, is the saboteur. I won't give anything else away about that, but it really is rooted in the ways in which we sabotage ourselves and the things and the monsters that we don't want to acknowledge about ourselves. And these are things that are both personal, and in season 2 actually becomes more communal and, you know, shadows and monsters of the community. So for me, it's really been a really interesting kind of psychological and ethical delving into, you know, psyche and, you know, kind of the magic of the world as well.
So why did you start making this podcast?
So I have a background in theater. I also have been an avid writer for years. I stopped writing and stopped performing for a while, and then I got started listening to fiction podcasts, starting with Welcome to Night Vale, which is kind of a absurdist, weird fantasy set in a, you know, town in like the middle of a desert. And it really kind of opened up space as I listened to more and more fiction podcasts that I could bring some of the stories I wanted to life. I realized as I was listening, I was just getting the ideas of like, ooh, if I had a character like this, this is what I would do. Or if there was a plot like this, I would make it end up like this. So I wrote Kalila Stormfire's Economical Magic Services during National Novel Writing Month. I decided to kind of go off novel writing and into scripts. And I was really motivated by bringing forward some of the stuff that I learned through my mentorship and meditation classes. So I really loved to kind of delve into my experiences and my personal flaws and issues that I struggle with in a fictional frame.
I'm Kimberly Adams. You're listening to 1A. And so why do you feel like you could tell those stories in this medium as opposed to another one?
It really came down to not really having to answer to anybody.
and that I could write a story. I could edit it. I could perform it. The first season is primarily my own voice. I did bring on other actors about halfway through the first season. Slowly but surely, it blossomed into about 10 actors. But really, I was rooted in the experience of being able to tell the story how I wanted to without, you know, holding back, I think is, and, you know, to kind of go to James' point, I really did bring a lot of my own experience, and I didn't want to moderate it. I wanted to, you know, talk about really hard issues around using urban fantasy, but also talking about real issues of racism and experiences of poverty intersecting with, you know, the medical system and, you know, our abilities to love our bodies. A lot of those things that, you know, Kalila's clients interact with and that she tries to help them through are, you know, kind of deep issues that I don't see being talked about in a fantasy or a fictional sense a lot. And I really wanted to kind of try it out.
Well, podcasting in general is overwhelmingly sort of cis heteronormative and white. And does that extend into the world of audio fiction and drama as you've experienced it?
I've noticed for me that the experiences of my fellow kind of independent podcasters, especially ones that kind of started out like me, where it was just one person or just a small group of friends, I have noticed, you know, they don't have any, either they're, you know, on a shoestring budget, are kind of, it definitely trends younger. It trends more, I see a lot of people of color and a lot of LGBTQ producers. I've noticed, though, there is a lot more interest in actors who are LGBTQ and, you know, LGBT. You essentially, in some ways, not having a video really kind of strips a part of the bias away. Not completely. There's still issues around, you know, how people talk, you know, accents, you know, how a voice is pitched and being and being gendered, and even age, understanding, like, you know, how your voice sounds can still, you can still kind of see biases and gatekeeping around that. But for me, at least, like, there has been, because, again, lower barrier of entry, it's less money than a lot of other areas. There's less kind of formal barriers of entry. I have seen, and at least personally for me, I've explicitly sought out fellow people of color and fellow LGBTQ creators.
James, why do you think this sphere in particular opens itself up for Black and Brown creators and the LGBTQ creators in this space?
Yeah, I think it's kind of touching on what Lizette was saying, was that it is that low barrier to entry, and it's one of those things where you can just get a microphone and go and record, and you can write your own story. And just, at least my experience with covering entertainment in Los Angeles, there's just so many people who are always saying that the space is very limited, that there's only a certain amount of slots for people to tell their story in television and film. And in podcasting, there aren't those slots. You can make a show and upload it today if you want to. And I think that's what makes it so attractive, is that because there aren't those barriers, because there aren't those gatekeepers, you can really just tell any story that you want to. And specifically for queer people, Black, Brown people, and women and non-binary people, it's just exciting to have that freedom to be like, I don't have restrictions. I don't have people telling me to do something or giving me notes or editing this story. Like, I can tell my own story, and I can do it as freely as I want to. At least for me, that's what kind of attracted me to this medium, is that that freedom was absolutely just exciting.
We have a tweet. Someone says, "Welcome to Night Vale. Single-handedly brought audio fiction into my life and opened the floodgates to all the things I listen to every day." You guys have referenced Night Vale quite a bit. And as the popularity of audio fiction podcasts increases, more people will want to make them. But how hard is it to do, and what does it take to break into the field? We'll have that and more. We're back in a minute. Stay close.
I'm so
We're talking about the past, present, and future of audio fiction with creators James Kim and Lisette Alvarez, critic Elena Fernandez-Collins, and David Reinstrom of the Radio Drama Revival podcast. And Lisette, let's start back with you. But first, I want to play a clip from one of our listeners, preceded by a tweet that we had. Steph sent this to our inbox. I'm enjoying the show. Had no idea the genre existed today. Can you recommend some family-friendly audio fiction shows? And to set that up, let's hear a clip from one of you, Tatiana in Richmond, Virginia.
My kid and I, we have been listening to a fictional podcast called 6 Minutes on the way to their afternoon activities as we're driving, and it's been an amazing experience, especially because this generation is so focused on image, and I love to see my kids discussing how do they think the characters look, or oh, this voice belongs to that character, and more than that, trying to predict what's going to happen. It's been an amazing bonding moment for us, and I am just loving it.
Lisette, any recommendations for kids' podcasts?
I do, actually. As someone who loves especially fantasy and fables, I love mythology. Fly Spables by your very own Morgan Givens, I would absolutely recommend. Anansi Storytime is also a pretty, it's kind of like that anthological storytelling type format by Scooter Mann. I also want to recommend, I really love this. It was a short limited series called The Two Princes, created by Gimlet. And all three of those are really good, I guess, solid child-friendly stories.
Ellie?
I would recommend The Unexplainable Disappearance of Mars Patel. Yeah. Which is like a... Well, it's a little bit described by the title, right? You've got a bunch of kids and someone's disappeared, and you get the story of them trying to figure out what happened.
And David, you have one?
Yeah, I would describe Unexplainable Disappearance of Mars Patel as Stranger Things for the Nickelodeon set.
Yes.
It's sort of like a mid-grade. It's like adventure, light suspense and drama. I would also add Mayan Crystal to that, another great one I keep thinking of this in terms of book ages, but that's another great adventure story for mid-grade readers about a girl and her fight against some really deeply unethical loggers in Belize.
James. Sorry, go ahead. James, do you have one? And then we'll go back to you, Ellie.
Oh, I'm such the wrong person.
Okay, back to Ellie.
I'm going to throw out Time Storm.
Oh, yes.
Time Storm is a middle grade adventure about two Puerto Rican kids living in New York who get sent back in time to observe and witness Puerto Rican history during the onset of Hurricane Maria.
So we've talked about now kids' podcasts, fantasy podcasts, lots of talk about the quirkiness of the Night Vale. What types of stories tend to be springing up in the world of audio fiction right now, David?
I'm glad you asked, because so going back to our friend Ella's Precy on the, she did a whole mapping of the world of independent audio fiction, independent and studio produced alike. And she surveyed 181 different productions and found that fully 81 of them, so it was like something like 44%, were science fiction. Science fiction currently predominates. Science fiction and fantasy predominate in modern independent audio fiction. That doesn't mean that there isn't incredible romantic comedies being produced. There are some that are fantastic that I love, like Deck the Halls with Matrimony is a great, it's incredible. The first season is basically like a 90-minute feature film. It's extremely good and very funny. And hearkening back to what everyone's been saying, that was produced by two writers in Los Angeles who were repeatedly told no for their scripts. And they looked at each other and they said, we can tell each other yes. Also, horror is huge. Horror and suspense in audio fiction. Because mechanically, it's very easy to withhold information from the audience. It doesn't feel like a cheat the way that it does in television. If there's, if it's a monster movie and you never get to see the monster... then you're like, okay, the budget is small. They're not going to show us the monster. But there, if in, in audio fiction, especially in a show that has a lot of body horror, like Archive 81, which is all about like inexplicable, nightmarish, eldritch sound magic, so much of what is witnessed by those characters is physically indescribable. And you, as the listener, are doing the work of constructing the most horrific thing you can imagine right in the theater of the mind.
And Ellie, what about sort of the business side of things? As this genre expands, how are these podcasts doing?
Well, that's a complicated question.
Give me a complicated answer.
Yeah. All right. So when we look at fiction podcasting, and we're looking at specifically independent, because almost all of the titles that we've said here so far are all independent shows, they are mostly being funded via Patreon. Right, this fundraising platform that focuses on indie artists, indie creators, and the answer is that they are doing okay. It vastly depends, right, on sort of the metric that you want to compare them to, right? So if you want to compare them to the metric of certain nonfiction shows, like My Favorite Murder, right, and that style of true crime, they're not doing as well. And that's partially because of the lack of media coverage, and with the lack of, from when they weren't on lists and from when they were kind of just being ignored, that means that it was much harder to build up marketing and build up kind of a force to be able to get people to come and donate money. Now we're starting to see these, this, like I was mentioning earlier, this big money, like Q Code, like Marvel, right? So Marvel has just hired a bunch of indie creators to create their next podcast. So they just hired Lauren Shippen from The Bright Sessions, Misha Stanton also from The Bright Sessions and Ars Paradoxica and The Whisper Forge, and Paul Bay from The Big Loop to create Marvels.
Lisa, you had some thoughts on this.
Yes. So as a independent creator, when I started this podcast, I did it just for myself, largely because I personally am not I'm not comfortable with not being able to pay other creators, specifically actors. I made it a goal for myself on my Patreon that if I reached a certain level per month, I'd be able to bring on and fairly pay an actor outside of myself. And for me, it's been really a matter of kind of leveraging my digital strategy skills. I work as a digital strategist with a web design and development company. I actually also do a podcast for them called The Feedback. And for me, it's been, you know, my abilities to market has kind of given me a little bit of a step forward. Definitely not in the getting sponsorships from other other companies. But I am trying to build community through and getting the community to help support and pay and be able to pay. And now I can pay a broader cast and crew. However, I think there's not a lot of independent funding from other organizations, and not just simply like, Marvel, creating their own shows, but, grants for fiction podcasting. There's not a lot of information that's easily accessible that is specifically targeted for fiction podcasts as well. Like you think of, grants for book writing or, fundraisers for theater, for local theaters. I mean, it really is an interesting space to be in when it comes to money, because it is with the low barrier of entry, with less money, there's also in some ways less money to be had.
Mm. And James, I imagine there's also sort of a finite audience. We've talked about sort of independent funding. There's some big podcast producers like Gimlet and the sort that are putting money into this. Of course, I guess there's the fantasy that you're going to get like optioned by Amazon or Hulu or something to turn your podcast into a movie or a serialized show. James, what is your sense of the landscape?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been seeing a lot of shows and independent shows and creators who've talked to me specifically about them getting optioned for books or, you know, television shows or film deals. Like Lauren Shippen just released her book Off the Bright Sessions, and you know, you have Paul Bay, who is also doing two different shows, like two of his different podcasts are being optioned for two different television shows. So there is a lot of people who are paying attention to this space, and specifically in Hollywood. And I think, you know, one thing that makes audio fiction so appealing for independent creators is also something that's appealing for Hollywood itself, is that it's original ideas, that you're being able to create whatever original idea you can do. And people in Hollywood are looking to podcasting and saying, well, we're constantly looking for original ideas to make things. And I've been agreeing with everything that everyone's saying, and that, like, it is very challenging to make an audio fiction show, is, you know, because if you want to make something very immersive, you have to pay, you know, all these actors. You know, Moonface had about 30 actors in the show, and, you know, we paid sound designers, we paid a composer, and the cost goes up and up and up. And, you know, with that, it's something in which it's difficult for a lot of people to step into this space and really make their dream project. But at the same time, with people paying more and more attention, I'm hoping that this barrier gets lower and lower, and that there's more people in this space, bigger people like Marvel,
okay,
to help independent creators out.
Hold that thought one moment for a sure. moment. I'm Kimberly Adams. You're listening to 1A. And James, go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. And just that, to end it off, it's that, you know, I want more people and bigger companies to be in this space to kind of fund these projects. And for me, it's looking like a lot of big companies and bigger industries are coming in and stepping into the audio fiction space.
Let's get a couple of your thoughts. Kevin tweeted, "My favorite podcast was released 10 years ago on iTunes. It's called We're Alive, a Story of Survival. And it's not about zombies. It went for 4 years and now has a sequel." Judy shared this with us in our inbox. "I grew up in Honolulu, and TV was slow to get there. I remember listening to The Lone Ranger on the radio from 1950 to 54. My mom listened to One Man's Family for years after we finally got a television set." And Kat tweeted, "Something awesome to note, the resurgence of audio drama is coincided perfectly with the resurgence of Dungeons & Dragons and shows like The Zonecast and its podcast form, Critical Role." And a question then, Jeff tweeted, "How do you balance narration and dialogue in audio fiction? Also, is there a space for literary fiction?"
Yes. So this is a really great point about framing devices. So a framing device is usually, when you think about it in terms of audio fiction, you'll see actually a lot of independent fiction podcasts, including my own, really starts off with the framing a device of someone recording a file or going through an archive and recording themselves, like the character is recording themselves. It's kind of a way to kind of understand why they choose to make this story in audio. It's trying to, you know, capitalize on the fact that it's in audio. A lot of people who do narrative, narration is really just a creative choice, I think. And in some ways, it really does help. I really love the way that Victoriosity, which is a alternative history, that it actually has a narrator. And in some ways, it's his own character. And he kind of gives you little tidbits to really broaden the world. But also, you still see dialogue, or you hear dialogue between the characters. And that it there's balances to be made, absolutely. And I think at least there is really creative choices to be made to balance the two too, as well.
Ellie, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm going to cite someone who I find very inspiring, Aaron Kyan, who's the creator of a podcast called Love and Luck out of Australia. And something that they have been saying for a long time is that restrictions can breed ingenuity. So I think something important from this is that you need to work with your resources, right? And if you are one person with not a lot of money, one of the best things that you can do to like figure out how to tell your dream story is figure out what you do have. You have yourself, you've got your mic and your computer. You've got maybe some like free sound effects, right? Free music that you can get online. And so that way you start building this narration heavy story, right? Because it's just you. And you, that way, unless you can do lots of character voices, you're going to create a story that's inside of those restrictions that you have.
All right, we're about out of time. Thank you very much. That was Elena Fernandez, Collins podcast critic and journalist. Ellie, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have James Kim, the creator and producer of the audio drama podcast Moonface. James, thank you.
Thanks.
And Lisette Alvarez, creator and producer of Kalila's Stormfire's Economical Magic Services. Lisette, thank you.
Thank you.
David Reinstrom, host of Radio Drama Revival podcast. Thank you for being on 1A.
Kimberly, what a pleasure.
And remember, you can subscribe to 1A's podcast on the NPR One app or whatever app you like. This conversation was produced by Morgan Givens. To learn more about our team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, and distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Kimberly Adams. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.